take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, May 14th, 2021, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to all you viewing on Facebook Live at facebook.com/radicalrus or listening live at radicalrus.com on the newly redesigned website. I hope you like it. Tried to design that for phone and tablet and make it easy to find the podcast and, well, there you go. Let me know at Radical Russ on Twitter, at Radical Russ on Facebook. Let me know if you like it or what I need to do to tweak it, because we want to make this the best possible podcast, because we are Idaho's marijuana podcast, America's last absolute prohibition state. And we've got a lot to talk about on today's show. Coming up, we're going to talk about the final attacks by the Idaho legislature against our constitutional right to petition, specifically our right to petition for a medical marijuana initiative, the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act. All sorts of shenanigans going down in Idaho for me to let you know about. So that's coming up in our Behind the Headlines right after our Cannabis Headline Newsweek. All sorts of news going down all across America. States red and blue that are changing their marijuana laws. Why can't Idaho get on board? We'll talk about that too. Also, in pot and public policy, we're going to take a look at the state of Mississippi, which I unfortunately have some breaking news for you. And that is the Mississippi Medical Marijuana Initiative, the constitutional amendment to legalize medical marijuana in the state of Mississippi, is now dead. It was killed by the state Supreme Court earlier this afternoon, and it's because of a technicality. It's really disgusting, to tell you the truth. People gathered the signatures, hundreds of thousands of signatures, to put it on the ballot, had to compete against another initiative that the legislature tried to put in the way, had to get two votes to get it passed, managed to get it passed with 73% of the vote. The Supreme Court came back today and said this initiative is invalid. And not just this initiative, but every initiative that had ever been proposed and passed in the state of Mississippi since the year 2000. Now, what's going on there? Well, the Mississippi initiative power was written to say that you couldn't collect any more than 20% of your signatures from any one congressional district. This is one of those geographic distribution requirements like we've talked about in Idaho with SB 1150. SB 1110, geographic distribution requirements that supposedly is so we get signatures from all across the state, right? So you can only get 20% from any one district in Mississippi. Well, that was written when Mississippi had five congressional districts. In 2000, during that census, Mississippi lost a congressional district and made it mathematically impossible for you to get no more than 20% from any one district, because you'd only have 80% of what you needed. If you did that, to get 100% of the signatures, you'd have to get at least 25% from every district. The Supreme Court ruled, and therefore the Mississippi Medical Marijuana Initiative and a couple other initiatives that had passed since 2000 are hereby invalidated. Well, that is a pretty disgusting breaking news story that's not in our Cannabis Headline Newsweek. Wanted to make sure you knew about that. But we'll also tell you about a man who is serving life without parole for marijuana possession in the year 2021. Can you believe it? Yes, I'll tell you all about that. And that's coming out of Mississippi as well. Plus, we'll take a look at the red state courts overall, not just in Mississippi, that are attacking the reform of marijuana that is becoming popular even among conservatives, even among Republicans, even among older voters. And they know it. Their only fight now is in the courts. But let's start out. Let's get you caught up on the news.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at patreon.com/radicalrus. With your cannabis headline news for the week ending Friday, May 14th, 2021, I'm Russ Belville. With Democrats in control of the Senate this session, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer doesn't plan to jeopardize a marijuana legalization bill he's working on by advancing a more modest cannabis banking measure first. In an interview with The Ringer that was released on Tuesday, the senator reiterated that he and his colleagues will be, quote, introducing our bill shortly, end quote, to end cannabis prohibition. And he said banking reform legislation that's been filed will have to wait because, quote, we're not going to bargain against ourselves, end quote.
Well, here's the immediate time frame. The three people working on a comprehensive bill are myself, Senator Wyden, and Senator Booker. And we will be introducing our bill shortly. And it is not just legalization, but it deals with the injustices of the past, expungement of the record, making sure that the money that's made from marijuana goes to the communities, communities of color, poor people, communities that have paid the price for this ridiculous scheduling of marijuana like it's like heroin or cocaine or something like that.
The head of a top federal drug agency is criticizing the ongoing policy of criminalizing people for drug use and is suggesting that the government should instead consider a policy of decriminalization. Nora Volkoff, the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, penned an essay for the journal Health Affairs that's titled Addiction Should Be Treated, Not Penalized. It lays out the case against incarcerating people over low-level drug offenses and looking at the issue as a public health matter. While it stops short of explicitly endorsing decriminalization, Volkoff says the current system leads to disproportionate enforcement against communities of color and can actually increase the risk of overdose deaths. Quote, drug use continues to be penalized despite the fact that punishment does not ameliorate substance use disorders or related problems, she said. Imprisonment, whether for drug or other offenses, actually leads to much higher risk of drug overdose upon release, end quote. A pair of congressional Republican lawmakers have introduced a bill to federally legalize marijuana, protect banks that service state legal cannabis business, and ensure that military veterans are specifically permitted to use marijuana in compliance with state laws. The Common Sense Cannabis Reform for Veterans, Small Businesses, and Medical Professionals Act is being sponsored by Representatives David Joyce and Don Young. The main crux of the legislation is to federally deschedule cannabis, and it's similar to past bipartisan proposals, but this one goes a few steps further with the language on legal protections and mandates for federal studies into medical cannabis. It does not contain social justice provisions to repair the past harms of the war on drugs, however. Under the proposal, marijuana would be removed from the Controlled Substances Act, clearing states to enact legalization. Cannabis could be imported and exported across states, though transporting marijuana to states where such activity is unlawful would remain federally prohibited. In the latest sign of shifting attitudes on marijuana policy in Congress, a Senate bill to protect banks that service state legal marijuana businesses gained a notable new co-sponsor on Wednesday. Susan Collins, the Republican senator from Maine, who is well known as a centrist, signed on to the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act, or SAFE Banking Act. The move is particularly notable given that just a few years ago she spoke out forcefully against a similar proposal because she didn't want banks to, quote, essentially finance dealers of recreational marijuana, end quote. To that end, the latest co-sponsorship may be a bellwether for the legislation, signaling that, like its House companion, it stands to earn bipartisan support if advanced to the Senate floor. What happened in the years since to lead Collins to back essentially the same proposal as a standalone bill? Most notable, of course, is the fact that Maine voters legalized cannabis for adult use, and so more businesses and constituents in her state now stand to directly benefit from its enactment than was the case in 2015 when Maine only had medical cannabis on the books. The growing number of countries that are moving to repeal harsh penalties against marijuana use are helping to reduce religious discrimination against Rastafarians and other groups, the U.S. State Department noted in an annual report released on Wednesday. But while the federal government is again making it a point to outline ongoing cannabis-related discrimination in some foreign countries and territories, the latest edition of the report on international religious freedom declines to recognize the inherent discrimination that exists in the U.S., where marijuana remains federally illegal. The new State Department document discusses cannabis policies in more than a dozen nations and how they intersect with religious liberties, including by noting that a growing movement toward legalization and decriminalization is helping to reduce discrimination that has been prevalent in the past. Don't bring your dog's CBD-infused shampoo on federal military bases, the U.S. Air Force reminded personnel in a recent blog post. While hemp and its derivatives are federally legal, and a growing number of states have regulated marijuana markets, a Massachusetts base of the military branch emphasized that possessing or using cannabis products can result in disciplinary action. Quote, hemp, CBD, and traces of THC can be found in a number of products like shampoos, lotions, and lip balms that you can buy in the open market, but you can't bring them onto the installation, Tech Sergeant Kyle Majorana said. Even if it's for your pet, it's still illegal, end quote. While this notice specifically targeted one Air Force base, the message is consistent with past updates from the military division, which has gone out of its way to make its cannabis policy clear. Alabama's governor said on Friday that she hopes to sign a medical marijuana bill that lawmakers sent to her desk this week, but only after she takes a close look at its provisions. Quote, I hope after thoroughly reviewing it, we can sign the bill, Governor Kay Ivey told WSFA-TV, adding that she's aware of cannabis's medical benefits, but also has some concerns. Quote, it helps some people, but you just don't want it to get out of control, end quote, she said. The governor has expressed openness to past medical cannabis proposals, but earlier on Friday, a spokesperson for her office declined to say what action she would take on this latest bill. The legislation hasn't formally been transmitted to Ivy's desk yet, but when it is, the state constitution sets a tight deadline for gubernatorial action. While the legislature is in session, the governor has 6 days from the time she gets the bill to either approve, veto, or take no action and let it go into law without her signature. She could also propose line item amendments and send it back to lawmakers, who could then approve or reject them. After years of debate on Thursday night that at times became heated, the Minnesota House of Representatives approved a bill to legalize marijuana in the state. After moving through 12 committees since being introduced in February, the full chamber passed the measure on a 72-61 vote, with some Republican support. It now proceeds to the Senate, where leaders in the GOP majority have vowed to derail it. The governor supports legalization, but the bill is still expected to face a significant challenge in the Republican-controlled Senate, where lawmakers have indicated that they're more interested in revising the state's existing medical cannabis program than more broadly ending prohibition. Part of winning over some Republican support involved adopting friendly amendments such as putting some cannabis revenue toward tax relief. As advocates applaud the passage of a medical marijuana legalization bill in the Kansas House of Representatives, anxieties remain high over its prospects in the GOP-controlled Senate. The chamber has days left before the end of the legislative veto session, and Senate leadership has signaled that they do not view the reform legislation as a priority. If the Senate doesn't take up the medical marijuana bill by May 11th, it would still be alive for the second half of the legislative biennium that starts early in 2022 and could be acted upon then. But even if senators do not make time to establish a bicameral conference committee to consider the proposal, there are still serious doubts about whether the body would approve the resulting negotiated legislation. And defeat in the Senate this year would mean lawmakers would have to start the process all over again if they wanted to pursue the reform legislation again next year. A bill to legalize smokable medical marijuana for patients that already passed the Louisiana House was approved in a Senate committee on Wednesday, sending it to the full chamber for a final vote. The move comes one day after the House advanced legislation to decriminalize cannabis possession, and another committee cleared a measure to impose taxes on marijuana sales if the state legalizes it for recreational use. A separate proposal to enact legalization, meanwhile, has again been delayed for House floor consideration, with a vote now expected next Tuesday. But while that represents the most ambitious cannabis reform bill to move through the conservative legislature this session, advocates are encouraged by Wednesday's vote to allow patients in the state's limited medical cannabis program to access raw, smokable flower marijuana products. Nebraska marijuana activists are wasting no time relaunching a campaign to put a medical cannabis legalization initiative before voters in 2022 after the legislature failed to pass a reform bill on Wednesday. The defeat of the fairly restrictive legislation in the unicameral body, which was the result of a filibuster that supporters were unable to overcome, came with an open threat from advocates,
Since lawmakers won't fulfill the will of voters, who overwhelmingly support medical marijuana, the voters will move to approve an even more comprehensive legalization measure. To avoid triggering the single subject rule that sunk their initiative in 2020, the new proposed measure is a single sentence, quote, "Persons in the state of Nebraska shall have the right to cannabis in all its forms for medical purposes," end quote. Nebraskans for Medical Marijuana is also thinking about filing a separate statutory petition that would establish a regulatory framework for a medical cannabis program in the state. Facing a tight deadline, a top Connecticut lawmaker said on Tuesday that a bill to legalize marijuana may be taken up in a special session after the legislature completes its regular business for the year. With the June 9th end of the legislative session less than a month away, House Majority Leader Jason Rojas was asked about the prospects of passing legislation to end cannabis criminalization in 2021, and he said lawmakers have been having great conversations with Governor Ned Lamont's administration as they work through competing reform proposals.
Yeah, listen, we're just going to continue to work on it until June 9th, right? So we are working on it. We're having great conversations with the administration. It's just one of those issues that we're working through some of the details that were of concern to everyone over the past couple months, but we're making progress.
An effort by lawmakers to require disclosure of ownership information for businesses granted medical marijuana licenses was derailed on Thursday when Missouri state regulators suggested a possible gubernatorial veto. On Tuesday, the Missouri House voted to require the Department of Health and Senior Services to provide legislative oversight committees with records regarding who owns the businesses licensed to grow, transport, and sell medical marijuana. The state constitution prohibits the state from issuing more than 5 dispensary licenses to any entity under substantially common control, ownership, or management. DHSS has justified withholding information from public disclosure by pointing to a portion of the Medical Marijuana Constitutional Amendment adopted by voters in 2018 that says the department shall, quote, "maintain the confidentiality of reports or other information obtained from an applicant or licensee containing any individualized data, information, or records related to the licensee or its operation," end quote. Colorado's marijuana sales eclipsed the $500 million mark in the first quarter of 2021, the State Department of Revenue said on Tuesday. In all, marijuana sales were over $560 million between January and March. More than $10.5 billion in marijuana has been sold in Colorado since it was legalized for sale in 2014. Those sales translate into over $1.7 billion in tax revenue that goes toward public schools, infrastructure projects, and local government programs. A Montana sheriff is throwing his support behind a marijuana banking bill that's being sponsored by one of the state's Republican U.S. senators. In an ad being promoted by Senator Steve Daines, Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter said that because cannabis businesses are forced to operate on a largely cash-only basis due to federal prohibition, that makes them targets of crime. And with Montana voters opting to legalize adult-use marijuana, it's imperative to enact a federal policy change.
We're not talking about thousands of dollars, we're talking about millions of dollars that will flow through that type of business. So there becomes security risk factors of how do you keep this money secure? And banks have perfected this.
The U.S. House of Representatives passed its companion version of the Safe Banking Act last month. Advocates are optimistic that with Democrats now in control of the Senate and the White House, it will advance through Congress and arrive on President Joe Biden's desk. Nearly 4 months after the state Supreme Court struck down Washington's felony drug possession law as unconstitutional, Governor Jay Inslee signed legislation on Thursday to recriminalize simple possession, this time as a misdemeanor. The governor did partially veto one section, however. The new law, which takes effect immediately, reestablishes criminal penalties but requires that individuals be referred to a health evaluation and possible treatment for their first 2 violations, allowing them to avoid arrest and a criminal record. The Aspen, Colorado City Council on Monday discussed the therapeutic potential of psychedelics like psilocybin and proposals to decriminalize such substances, but members said as it stands, enacting a reform would be better handled at the state level while entheogens remain strictly federally controlled. While numerous cities across the U.S. have adopted measures to deprioritize enforcement of laws against entheogenic plants and fungi, and Oregon voted to legalize psilocybin mushrooms for medical use, the local legislators did not take action beyond talking about psychedelics research and outlining the various policy challenges associated with state and federal prohibition. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, May 14th, 2021. I'm Russ Belville.
Cannabis Headline News is heard at the top of every hour on Radical Russ Radio, and Friday's news is contained within the free Russ Belville Show live podcast. For daily downloads of Cannabis Headline News podcast to your device every morning, subscribe by becoming a patron of Radical Russ Radio.
Be rounding up Idaho's marijuana attacks. The latest two bills we're waiting on from the Idaho legislature, if they ever get around to them, and more coming up on the Russ Belville Show. But that sound means that it's 20 after. That means time for our union-mandated safety briefing. We want to make sure everyone is safe, especially when you're token in a red state. They can put you in jail for that stuff.
It's time for Idaho to join the rest of the nation in legalizing medical marijuana. The volunteers at Kind Idaho have proposed the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act and are collecting signatures now to place it on the ballot. Visit kindidaho.org to learn more. Become a volunteer signature gatherer for Kind Idaho to help collect the over 65,000 signatures needed to put medical marijuana on the November 2022 ballot. Polls show it will pass. Please visit kindidaho.org today.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I would imagine that there's probably a gun in the school to protect from potential grizzlies.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too.
Radical Russ here, reminding you that marijuana legalization doesn't just happen. Smart, dedicated activists have put their freedom and future on the line to make it happen. Like the activists at the Drug Policy Alliance, DPA has been fighting to end the persecution of drug users through the enactment of policy that ends criminalization and promotes harm reduction. DPA has also been a backer of many of the medical and recreational marijuana laws to pass in America. Find out more by visiting drugpolicy.org. And keep it here on Radical Russ Radio for conversations with leaders from this organization, the best marijuana music, and the latest news about cannabis.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our cannabis focus.
In what has now become the Idaho legislature's longest ever session, we are still waiting on the results of two bills that have attacked the rights of petitioners generally and our attempt to put medical marijuana on the ballot more specifically in the state of Idaho. And the latest bills we should be telling you about here, 1150 is actually 1150A now, and that is at the governor's desk. And we are just waiting to see if he is to sign or veto it, and there's no indication that he would veto this bill. 1150 is the bill that bans the gathering of signatures outside the state of Idaho for any Idaho initiative. See, sounds simple enough, but you have to understand what it's attacking. Nobody has ever actually tried to gather any significant number of signatures outside the state of Idaho. It really doesn't make much sense, right? You wouldn't set up a booth somewhere in some other state expecting to see a lot of Idahoans show up there, except in one case, ours. There are 9 marijuana shops now in the city of Ontario, Oregon, that are serving hundreds of Idahoans a day who come there to legally purchase marijuana, who will make that drive and drive back through the gauntlet of eastbound 84 because they want to follow the law. They don't want to have to go underground. They don't want to have to deal with the black market. They like paying taxes on their marijuana. They like knowing that it's tested. They like knowing that it's safe. And so we've got these people that are would be very ready to sign an initiative to legalize medical marijuana or decriminalize marijuana or what it might be. So the legislature concocted this SB 1150 bill specifically to thwart that, even though it had never happened. It hasn't happened yet. And if you think it through a little bit, you can understand why. If you're a shop owner in Ontario, Oregon, who's making bank on people coming all the way from all points in Idaho, as far as Twin Falls and Pocatello sometimes, and you want to lose that business by giving them a much closer access point somewhere within their state,
So there hasn't been any effort to try to collect signatures at those dispensaries. But to try to end that possibility, they put together Bill 1150. Now, it went through the Senate quite easily because the Senate is as anti-marijuana as possible. The House is too, but they are still willing to consider the Constitution every now and then. So when 1150 came around to the House, we testified against it and pointed out that you are disenfranchising Idahoans. They don't lose their rights when they cross a border. An imaginary line doesn't change their constitutional right to petition. And it's especially egregious when you consider that nobody ever loses their constitutional right to vote when they go out of state. They can vote absentee. So we have this situation that they're proposing where someone who's outside the state couldn't propose an initiative, but they could vote on it. Doesn't make any sense. And it sounds to me like a 14th Amendment violation, given that we are losing our equal protection under the law when we move from state to state. Nevertheless, they moved forward with this 1150 bill, and it ran into opposition in the House once we pointed out that, you know, this wouldn't just affect the marijuana consumers that are going to Ontario. It would affect missionaries from the Mormon Church, most specifically, who are indebted to do a 2-year mission out of state. It would affect members of the Idaho National Guard and members of the armed forces from the state of Idaho who serve overseas somewhere and can't get back to Idaho to sign a petition. So that scuttled 1150 for a couple weeks, but then it came back from the dead, amended by Representative Brent Crane, to simply provide a couple of exceptions. If you're a missionary or you're in the military, you can still sign petitions when you're out of state. And that made this even more offensive, because as it was brought up and we pointed out this was to stop the gathering of signatures on the medical marijuana initiative, a few of the representatives and senators said, oh, no, that's not our consideration. Golly, we just want to make sure we protect the integrity of the election, the integrity of the initiative process. That's all we had in mind. But then you throw these two exceptions in. That tells us that you had no concerns about the integrity of anything but people trying to vote to change marijuana laws in the state. So they're moving forward with this bill. It's at the governor's desk. It's already passed the House. After they amended it, that managed to quell the fears of people who supported the military and the missionaries. Okay, it's okay if you take some people's constitutional rights away. That's fine. If they're just crossing the river to go stand in a parking lot for a few minutes, well, you can take their rights, not the people that are serving God or serving their country. Don't take their rights, just the people crossing the river to legally buy marijuana. Another bill that we were waiting on, and I believe this one's now in limbo, is SB 1218. Now, the 1218 bill was brought up, again, hastily, in the last week of the legislature and rushed through committees within less than 24 hours of its printing. This bill was to ban the commercial advertising and promotion of marijuana sales, manufacturing, preparation, or distribution in the state of Idaho. And it was brought up because somebody, and whenever somebody is invoked by these people, it usually means retired cops from California, but somebody brought up to their attention that there were billboards near the border of Idaho, in the state of Idaho, billboards for these marijuana shops in Ontario that I've been mentioning. And there have also been sign waivers who have come into Boise and handed out flyers. Now, again, they're not advertising prices or what they're selling, but just the fact that these places exist. And that was too much for the delicate sensibilities of the Idaho legislature and their handlers. So they came up with SB 1218 to ban all advertising of marijuana. But again, like the SB 1150, it was written kind of broadly in such a way that it could be ensnaring more people than it intends. It intends to stop these billboards and flyers and sign waivers, and already that runs into some First Amendment considerations. But then it also bans the promotion. And that's a little bit different. If I'm a podcaster, say, and one of these marijuana dispensaries in Ontario wanted to sponsor my podcast. And then I went and did my podcast live in the state of Idaho. Would I be in violation of this law? I'd be promoting, I'd be getting paid for it. So there's a commercial consideration on my end for my sponsor, a cannabis company. But I'm just telling the news. I'm just doing news and opinion. I'm not in the business of selling marijuana. So where does this law affect me? How would it affect the Boise Hemp Fest that has vendors? Vendors that have to pay booth fees to be at this hemp fest, that then this hemp fest then promotes the legalization of marijuana. And part of the legalization of marijuana is allowing people to grow it. And that's manufacture. Speaking of growing marijuana, what if you've got old Jorge Cervantes or Ed Rosenthal grow books? You got some of those old grow books or maybe some of their new grow books and you want to put them for sale up on Craigslist. Would that be illegal in the state of Idaho because it's promoting the manufacture of cannabis, a Schedule I drug? This is gives you some indication of how terrified this legislature is of its majority, of the majority of the people in its state that want marijuana, and their paternalistic attitude that they know better, that we have to resort to these extra constitutional means to stop them, to stop the people from doing what's bad for them, like we don't know any better, like we can't look at the results of what has happened in every other state in the nation that has some form of marijuana reform and their sky didn't fall and people ended up doing better and they started getting tax revenues from it. We can see this with our own eyes. This idea that there's some cabal of big marijuana out there that's conspiring to fool the people into Idaho into accepting the addiction for profit industry is ridiculous. The people of Idaho have wanted this for years. They've just never thought it was possible because they know how this legislature acts and they know how this law enforcement acts in backing them up. And believe me, folks, it's a lot of law enforcement involved here. It's law enforcement that doesn't want to lose their easy weed bus. And in hour two, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the easy weed bus that they're afraid of losing. Because this is the NYPD has kind of confirmed this in a recent story. So we'll talk about that. Also, I forgot to mention this at the beginning of the show, kind of burying the lead. But we're going to do a flashback in hour two. I was digging around the archives and I found... I couldn't remember that I had this, but I do. From a decade ago, at Rolla J Studios with my friend Ganja John, we had in the studio Ian Carmel, who's currently like the head writer, co-host of The Late Late Show with James Corden, and wonderful comedian Ron Funches, who you probably know from his stint on Undateable. It was a sitcom on NBC. Yeah, Ron Funches and Ian Carmel in my studio basement 10 years ago before any of us were famous. And now two of them are. Certainly not me or Ganja John. Well, maybe in a little weird sort of weedy way. Be right back with pot and public policy. I'm going to talk about that man in Mississippi serving life without parole for marijuana possession. They say no one's in prison for marijuana possession. I'm going to tell you about a guy who's in prison for the rest of his life for marijuana possession.
Busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
You're listening to Radical Russ Radio, where it's 420, 24/7, 365.
And now, Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
When states legalize and cops have to retire their pot-sniffing canine officers, can we adopt those dogs to help us find those baggies we lost? This has been Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
Marijuana legalization is just the beginning of a process of restoring our natural rights to the cannabis plant. Join us now as we learn more about the rules, regulations, and court decisions that are shaping the landscape of legal marijuana in this edition of Pot Public Policy.
Today we're talking a little bit about a public policy known as the Three Strikes Rule, which is in criminal justice where you have a third serious felony. And it's defined differently in different states. But the concept is, on your third serious felony, we lock you up and we throw away the key. It's a relic of the mass incarceration that we foisted upon America in the 1990s during the Clinton administration. And why we went to baseball to figure out whether or not someone has the potential to be rehabilitated is beyond me. Three strikes and you're out, you know. Why not five fouls from the NBA or from college basketball, or six fouls from the NBA? Or we had to go with baseball for some reason. Three strikes and you're out. Sells bumper stickers and gets people elected, but it's a terrible public policy. And the result of this brings me to a refrain that I hear a few times from prohibitionists. There now and then when I'm arguing with them on the internet, I was arguing with one called ALM, Americans Against Legalizing Marijuana. And they were responding to something I had said, and they said, quote, "No one is in jail for simple possession or for just smoking pot. We have refuted this lie multiple times with actual prison data." So you've heard that a lot, right? Nobody's really in jail. Nobody's really in prison for smoking pot, which first of all begs the question, so what's the point then? Like if it's not something we're willing to throw people in jail for, why keep it illegal in the first place? But all right, so we've got this no one's in jail for smoking pot. Now, what they say is that we're misstating the case, right? If we do find someone who's in jail, what they'll say is, oh, well, that was they pleaded down. It wasn't just simple possession. They had possession with intent, and then they pleaded down to simple possession. So that's why. So it wasn't really simple possession. Or, yeah, there was a violent, they did something, it was a robbery or whatever. They were there, and they were there for weed. So it wasn't just simple possession. They also were involved in a robbery, or they also had a gun, or they were also on probation or whatever else. So it wasn't just simple possession. So I want to poke a few holes in that, because the facts are the facts. First of all, when they say no one's in jail, look, anyone who gets the cuff slapped on him and is hauled off to booking is in jail for simple possession or for just smoking pot. Now, it might just be a couple, 3 hours or so while they're getting booked and they finally get bailed out, but that's in jail. And there's lots of people in local jails right now who haven't yet even been charged with the crime officially. You know, they haven't been arraigned, that are in jail right now just because they got caught with some weed. And lucky if you can make bail, because if you can't make bail, then you're going to stay in there for a few weeks, maybe a couple months before you get around to getting arraigned and getting a chance to prove your innocence. So don't tell me no one's in jail for simple possession. Now, what they mean, though, what they're trying to say is no one's in prison. All right, because that's where they say, we refuted this lie multiple times with actual prison data. No one's serving hard time in a prison only for marijuana possession. Yeah, okay, tell that to 38-year-old Alan Russell of Mississippi. Alan Russell of Mississippi is serving life in prison for about a quarter pound of marijuana. And the Mississippi Supreme Court The same one that just recently decided the medical marijuana initiative was no good because you can't get 25%, less than 25% in a district. That same Supreme Court also decided this guy's case because it was appealed on this three strikes deal. And they didn't hear the appeal. They rejected the appeal. So they confirmed that this man's going to serve life in prison without the possibility of parole for about a quarter pound of marijuana. Now, the prohibitionists, when they look at this case, they're going to say, oh, come on, Russ, now you're stretching it again because he was caught for his third strike. As a habitual offender, this was his third strike, so it wasn't just simple marijuana possession. Well, yes, it was. It's a distinction without a difference. The act for which he was caught that became his third strike was simple possession. If marijuana were legal, it wouldn't matter how many strikes he has on his record. This couldn't be a third one. So it is simple marijuana possession that put this man behind bars. Now, let's talk about the habitual offender law here. So here's his case. He's 38 years old. So 17 years ago in 2004, 17 years ago, let's see, he'd be 21 at the time. So back when he was a young man, and he probably did it before he was 21, because by the time it got to trial in 2004, maybe it happened in 2003, but still, as a young man, he was convicted of two home burglaries, which were actually burglaries of the same house, just a couple days apart. So yeah, technically it was two burglaries, but it was one house, the people weren't there, he snuck in, he took stuff, twice. So for that, he got two concurrent, you know, serving at the same time, 15-year prison sentences, and he served 8.5 years of those prison sentences before he was released. So at around age 21, he did something wrong. That's definitely a crime. He can't, you know, break into people's houses and steal stuff. He serves 8.5 years, so he's getting out, what, at age 30 after all this? Then in 2015, so shortly after he gets out of jail, right, shortly after he gets out of prison, he was convicted of being a felon in possession of a firearm. Now, as a felon, you're not supposed to have a gun. That is indeed a crime. But it's not a violent crime. Just merely having the gun is not a violent crime. It's a violation of statute. It's a violation of law, for sure. And I have a little bit of sympathy because guys that just gotta get out of prison often don't have resources or money, and they're often on the streets, and they need to be able to protect themselves too. But yes, it was a crime. He shouldn't have had that gun. So with that in his record, in 2017, he was caught with the marijuana, and it was like five baggies. Each baggie had an ounce or less or so. So he had, you know, marijuana, enough marijuana that he was probably selling some bags to someone. But again, as an ex-con, sometimes that's the only job you can get. But anyway, that's still a crime in Mississippi. So normally the amount he was caught with would be at most 3 years in jail and at most a $3,000 fine. But because of this habitual offender law, here's the way it works. If someone in Mississippi has served at least 1 year in prison on two separate felonies, one of which was a violent felony, the person can be sentenced to life without parole. Okay, now here's where this gets really maddening. In 2004, when he committed those home burglaries, those were not defined as a violent felony unless you actually committed violence. Now, in his case, he didn't. He broke into a couple empty houses. People were gone. Or he broke into one house twice while the people were gone. So there was no violence at all. But in 2014, Mississippi changed its law to define that type of, to define burglary per se as violent. Even if no one was there, even if no violence happened, any burglary is violent. So that retroactively applied to the two burglaries he did 10 years prior to make those violent felonies. So now the third strike applies to him. See, if he'd gotten caught with the weed in 2013, The two burglaries would not have been nonviolent, would have been nonviolent crimes. The third strike law wouldn't have kicked in. He'd have only gotten 3 years at most for the weed. And if that doesn't, the thing that really blew my mind on this one is I posted this story and I got pushback on it from some people. Yeah, he deserved it. He'd have been in jail for something else anyway, was one of the comments. Which, you know, gee, I wonder what colored your perception on that one. Nobody, let's be clear about this. Nobody deserves to be arrested and jailed for marijuana, no matter who they are, no matter what they've done. O.J. Simpson does not deserve to be jailed for marijuana. Harvey Weinstein does not deserve to be jailed for marijuana. Bill Cosby does not deserve to be jailed for marijuana. Henry Kissinger does not deserve to be jailed for marijuana. They deserve to be jailed for plenty of other things, but not marijuana. No matter the worst mass murderer in history, whoever you want to say that is, does not deserve to be jailed for marijuana. So miss me with this whole, well, he was an habitual offender. The guy did a couple of home burglaries when he was 21. He's 38 now. He's 38 now, and we're going to throw his entire rest of his future, the rest of his life away, because he had some weed on him. Some weed in 2021.
Russ Belville, the sole producer of this 24-hour marijuana music and cannabis conversation stream I call Radical Russ Radio. As part of my mission to educate and entertain people about the need to end adult marijuana prohibition, I produce the Russ Belville Show podcast every week, available absolutely free wherever you get your podcasts. For those of you who'd like to help support my mission financially, you can become a Radical Russ Radio VIP at patreon.com/radicalruss. or by clicking the link for Toker Talk Radio in the main menu. For just $4.20 a month, VIPs will receive the exclusive download of Hour 2 of my podcast, Toker Talk Radio, every week, as well as the 5-minute cannabis headline news every weekday. Upgrade to the $14.20 a month tier, and you'll get those podcasts and a set of custom patriotic pro-marijuana stickers from me every quarter. And if you can afford to support Radical Russ Radio at $44.20 a month, you get my podcast, and each quarter you receive a poster, then a mug, then a t-shirt, and finally a hoodie that proclaim your support for ending adult marijuana prohibition. I literally cannot do this without you. Your support enables me to continue my life's work, and I thank you for it. Visit patreon.com/radicalruss and become a Radical Russ Radio VIP today.
Must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Taking a look at the red states lately that have been working to defeat the people and their will when it comes to marijuana reform. Of course, I'm focused mostly on the state of Idaho, where we've got no less than 8 bills that were filed this session, most of them to attack the initiative process or marijuana in general. But we're not the only red state where the legislators and the courts are being used to try to thwart the will of the people who've passed an initiative. Of course, the breaking news that we started the show with begins us in Mississippi, where the state Supreme Court there has invalidated Initiative 65. That's the initiative that passed with 73% of the vote in the 2020 election, legalizing medical marijuana for the state of Mississippi. The Supreme Court has ruled that that initiative and every initiative passed since 2000 are invalid. because of a technicality. The technicality is that initiatives must collect no more than 20% of their signatures from any one congressional district. That was written when they had five congressional districts, so you could get 100% at 20% times five districts. But now, since 2000, Mississippi's only got four congressional districts. And so 20% times four only brings you to 80%. It's impossible now to do any initiative in the state of Mississippi. And the Supreme Court admitted as much. In ruling on this case, they noted how it had massive support, 73% support, and that the people got the statewide signatures. You know, they followed the spirit of the law, which was you have to collect equally from all the districts. They managed to do that. But the Supreme Court ruled we can't go with the spirit of the law. We have to go with the letter of the law. Letter of the law says you can't get any more than 20% in a district. And that means that the initiative process in the state of Mississippi is invalid. It is operationally invalid until either the legislature makes a change or in another census in 2030 or 2040 or sometime in the future, Mississippi is once again awarded a congressional district. Not likely to happen because that would mean you'd have to have some massive population influx to the state of Mississippi. Don't really see that happening. So this is a good time as any to mention the idea of uncapping the House. The House of Representatives is at 435 representatives and has been since 1910. Now, before that, the U.S. House grew as the population of the nation grew. And in fact, the Founding Fathers wanted to put that in the Constitution. The first amendment they ever wrote was an amendment that said that the U.S. House would continue to grow until after it had 1 million people in the United States, it would be one representative for every 50,000 people. One representative per 50,000. Right now, we're at one representative for every 750,000 Americans, which is just not giving us the ability to be represented and to have an effect on our elected officials. There's just too many of us. So they had proposed that in what's called Article the First. It was never ratified by the Congress, although it still could be ratified by the states and the Congress and put into the Constitution. Now, if you do the math, that would end up with a Congress of about 6,400 people. And some people point out that may be too unwieldy. So there are other ideas out there. One of them is the Wyoming rule, which would say no district can be any smaller. Every district must be at least the size of Wyoming. And Wyoming's is like 560,000. And that would increase the House a few. Regardless of whatever method that we use, adding more people to the U.S. House would be a good thing. Not in the least that it might give some more representatives to the state of Mississippi, and they could go back to having initiatives again. Now, this lawsuit came about because of just one mayor in Mississippi who decided to sue over the provisions of the Mississippi initiative process and claimed to not be doing it to have anything to do with medical marijuana specifically. But as the example of Idaho has shown, anytime marijuana is on the ballot and people have a chance to vote on it, the legislators are going to pull some shady shit. Speaking of that, we've also got in South Dakota, we are waiting to see whether or not South Dakota is able to continue having its marijuana legalization. A lawsuit there at a lower court level has invalidated South Dakota's marijuana initiative for violating a single subject rule. The point there being that allowing people to possess and cultivate marijuana is one thing, but creating an entire commercial business around it, all the regulations for a commercial enterprise around it, constitutes another subject. That's being challenged right now and might have to go to the South Dakota Supreme Court to decide whether or not the buying and selling of marijuana is a separate subject from the possessing and cultivating of marijuana. That single subject rule is one that has already been used successfully in Nebraska. In Nebraska, they put an initiative out in 2020 for medical marijuana, collect over 190,000 signatures to put it on the ballot. it was taken off the ballot by the Nebraska Supreme Court that had ruled that it violated a single subject rule by allowing patients to, you guessed it, cultivate and possess marijuana and creating a separate commercial market for the buying and selling of marijuana. By failing that single subject rule, it took it off of the ballot and led the initiative supporters to make a threat that if the legislature didn't get around to passing a medical marijuana law, they would come back with a single subject bulletproof initiative. Well, we just got the news this week. The Nebraska legislature, which, by the way, is a unicameral legislature. They only have one legislature. There's no House, no Senate. It's just one body. And that one body filibustered the Medical Marijuana Act, a very restrictive medical marijuana bill. Wouldn't have allowed marijuana smoking. They filibustered that bill, and the proponents needed 33 votes to get past the filibuster. They could only get 31. They were two votes short of getting a vote on medical marijuana in the state of Nebraska. And since that happened, the backers of the initiative have gone forward with their initiative, which is: persons in the state of Nebraska shall have access to cannabis in all its forms for medical purposes. That's not the title, folks. That's the entire initiative. Persons in the state of Nebraska shall have access to cannabis in all its forms for medical purposes. No conditionless, no limits on potency or what kind of form or whether you can smoke it, all its forms for medical purposes, whatever medical purposes get defined to be. And given the support for medical marijuana in the state of Nebraska, I would think this initiative has a very good chance of passing. By doing so, it would pass and, of course, give people the right to possess and use it. There would be no commercial production, but Nebraska is bordering Colorado, and you can bet there'll be a lot of people making that trip across the border to be able to legally purchase their medical cannabis and bring it back into the state of Nebraska. But it goes to show that this is the battlefield now for marijuana, which is kind of good news. The battlefield used to be in the court of public opinion, trying to get people on our side, to get voters to support marijuana enough to be able to vote for it. Now that we've won that battle, our opponents know their only hope is in anti-democratic means, through the courts, through lawsuits. We're seeing this in the state of Montana as well. The state of Montana has an opponent who is suing, again, trying to invoke things like a single subject rule to get marijuana that has been approved by a large majority of the people back into the criminal books. And we're going to see more and more of this as the low-hanging fruit states have already been plucked. All of the liberal and Western and more libertarian states have pretty much gone along with marijuana reform. And so now the fights are going to be more and more in the courts. We're seeing a fight in the courts right now on our side, trying to overturn some of these laws. There's a group in Idaho called Reclaim Idaho. They were the group that was successful in putting Medicaid expansion on the ballot and getting it passed in the last election. They, along with a couple of former attorneys general and a group that they have formed, have filed a lawsuit against SB 1110. SB 1110 is another one of these bills in Idaho, one of the seven bills the Idaho legislators did to attack marijuana. SB 1110 requires that signatures for any initiative in the state must be gathered within all 35 legislative districts. We told you about Mississippi and its congressional districts. Well, in Idaho, they're working off of state legislative districts. The law as it had been, and the one that Reclaim Idaho had qualified under, was a law that required 18 out of 35 districts. You had to collect 6% of the registered voters' signatures from at least 18 out of 35 of the state's districts. That has been changed by SB 1110 to be all the legislative districts. And as we pointed out during testimony, that gives one district the power to veto an initiative. It also makes it prohibitively expensive to try to put initiatives on the ballot. And of course, that was the idea. We'll see how their lawsuit goes. If it succeeds, we may go back to just having a 6% statewide requirement, and that might make even more initiatives possible. But it's going to be a rocky road to get there. Thank you for your support in helping us get there. I'm Radical Russ, coming to you from the border of America's last absolute prohibition state. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You take a seat, you manage.